Tom Poberesny on Oshkosh, the home built movement, and the future of the 51% rule. I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome back to Lakeland. Paul Plack here with Tom Poberesny, the president of the Experimental Aircraft Association. We're going to talk to Tom today about some things that impact home building and aviation in general and the influence of home building. Tom, first of all, great to see you around here today, and thanks for taking a few minutes out to talk to us.
Thanks, Paul. It's a pleasure being with you, and look forward to talking about aviation over the next few minutes.
Well, let's talk about the big story in aviation that's already going to be sweeping everything off the table here for a while, and that's Oshkosh. Every few days, there seems to be something new to report on Oshkosh and what's going on. What can you tell us about this year's event that may be different from what people have seen in the past?
Well, what's interesting, Paul, we work hard to make it different but not make it different. What is the essence of Oshkosh is the culture, the programs, the activities. In fact, some of the things that don't make the news, the relationships, the flight line programs, and so forth. You know, Oshkosh is an event, and you can appreciate this. It's, you almost have to see it to believe it, to understand it, but you know, it's aviation's buffet. It has something for everyone, from the large military aircraft to the ultralights to home builds to light sport aircraft and everything in between. We're excited about this year's event. You know, I've been chairman of Oshkosh since about 1976. You'd think it'd become old hat after a while, but every time, about this time of the year, I get fired up again looking forward to it and welcoming hundreds of thousands of aviation enthusiasts from around the world.
Well, now, you obviously have some personal and family history with Oshkosh since before you became president of EAA. When did it turn the corner from being the home-built show to the must-attend show for every segment of aviation?
That's a great question. You know, we started off in Milwaukee back in the 1950s and Rockford, Illinois in the 60s and moved to Oshkosh in 1970. And when we got to Oshkosh in the 70s, it was primarily an amateur-built home-builder show, vintage aircraft, because a lot of the restoration techniques are the same as building an airplane. And then over the 70s and early 80s, there became an evolution of with more warbirds and exhibitors growing and so on. And I think there are a couple of things that kind of changed the tenor. One was the first appearance of the Concorde. It came from London to Oshkosh in 1985. And for all of us as aviation enthusiasts, very few people had seen the Concorde live and in color. The other thing is that Oshkosh has evolved as a result of the home-built routes into the place where innovation technology is introduced. Whether it's manufacturers, certified manufacturers, or home builders, Oshkosh is the place where the new, latest, and greatest is announced and presented, and that's what we want to be, is the home of innovation.
It's been interesting to me. I've only been a part of aviation for a few years now. I caught the pilot bug as kind of a midlife thing. This is flying little planes around as my red Corvette. But the thing that strikes me about home building is that, yes, especially in the regulatory environment where it costs a minimum of $50 million to get a new aircraft through Part 23, home building is where all the new techniques get tried out even today.
Absolutely, and we'll probably talk about this a little later in terms of the role that home building plays. But the magic of Oshkosh is not just the core competencies of the home builder and the innovator. It's the place where information is exchanged, where you can gain new ideas, where the average citizen who may not have access otherwise can talk to the visionaries like Bert Rattan and John Rons and others and use that to fire up their own imagination. And you know, good ideas come from other good ideas, and they build upon that. And we want to be the incubator of those ideas at Oshkosh and allow anybody who's an enthusiast to sit and listen in and hear about the latest and greatest in aviation.
Tell us how home building got started and how it got to where it is today.
Well, it's interesting, Paul. Kind of going in reverse order, we'll touch on the role that it plays today. But, you know, the home build movement restarted back in the 40s, you know, in terms of people building their own airplanes in a regulatory environment, and started to gain stature when EAA was formed in 1953 in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And the reason EAA was formed is a group of individuals, my father included, who was founder, that just basically wanted to build their own airplane for education, hands and mind, and economic reasons. Over time, it was using parts from other airplanes to build together your airplane. Then it went to raw materials. Then the kit evolved where you could kind of buy it in a box and put it together, along with composites and a number of other things. But what really put an impetus behind it was back in the 70s. We were in the heyday of general aviation. Cessna was building 17,000 single-engine airplanes. All of a sudden, we saw the decline in manufactured airplanes, and people turned to the home build movement in the 80s and 90s for the airplane of their dreams, the airplane of their vision. And what's happened out of that is that it spawned companies such as Cirrus, what used to be Columbia, now part of the Cessna team, and also a lot of technology and innovation. The VLJ movement was spawned at Oshkosh. So starting with those individuals who built in their basement garages has spawned an industry to where today almost 25% of the single-engine fleet are home-built airplanes. 25%, 30,000 home-builds are flying today. That's an amazing number.
You mentioned this in the context of the regulatory environment. I mean, when it comes down to it, the Wright brothers were home builders.
First home builders.
Yeah, the first home builders. Bert Rattan is a home builder who's going to space. And so it does totally span the entire history of aviation. I guess what I'd have to ask you is, if the regulatory environment that governs home building has kept up with, A, the state of the art, the kinds of education we need to acquire as home builders, and B, the technology of aviation in general. I know that these two worlds are kind of butting heads right now.
Right, and Paul, boy, you put together a massive question that if we had another couple hours, we could talk about it. But I think what's happened is that the vision of the regulatory environment back in 1953 and the results today are two different things. In the fact that home building has done so much to contribute to the design and innovation that you see in aviation today, and it's contributed to the fact that there's more choice than ever before in terms of the airplanes you can buy or build, which I'm very proud of. Going back and putting this in perspective is the fact that the Burt Rutans and the John Ronsons, the Frank Christensens, the Curtis Pitts have been icons along the way and has spawned others to come into the industry and become the Alan Klappmeyers and the Dale Klappmeyers of today and the others that have contributed so much to aviation. The regulatory environment is such that we have not gone through a change in regulations in over 50 years, which says a lot about the integrity, the safety, and the standards. But what's key to the whole thing is education. Education not only in building, but how to operate safely, because as soon as we don't operate safely, we lose the privilege. And right now, we're under pressure in the 51% rule, and I'll talk about that in just a moment. So we've enjoyed a regulatory environment that has spawned innovation, highlighted safety, and has developed a relationship between the industry and the government that shows what a partnership can accomplish. But when time is appropriate, I'd like to talk about some of the pressures we're facing also.
Well, that appropriate time would be right after this break, Tom. We'll be right back. Paul Plack here with Tom Poberesny at Lakeland. We'll be back in a moment.
You hear that sound? It's one of the all-time great inventions. Takes lids off cans just like that. But now, let's picture something even bigger. A tool that can take the lid off a whole airport. Actually, thousands of airports. It's a Garmin Wass GPS. Lets you make glide path approaches using runways that were once closed tight during IFR conditions. Hey, if you're gonna fly in the soup, you gotta have an opener. Garmin Wass GPS. Follow the leader.
Diamond's DA-42 Twin Star is General Aviation's ultimate flying machine. Fly fast with the confidence of a twin for the cost of a single. Go direct over water or rugged terrain and cover great distances in the first and only piston aircraft with an advanced airframe, avionics, and engines. The DA-42 gives you options you've never had before, including the Garmin G1000 and known ice protection. Go where you want, when you want, fast and for less. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3220.
Finally, aviation headsets have evolved. Clarity Aloft is the next generation of headset design for a number of reasons. Clarity Aloft headsets are known for the superior clarity of sound. They're lightweight but rugged enough to meet military specifications. Best of all, they boast better noise reduction than ANR in the speech frequencies that matter most to you. For more information, call 612-747-3197 or check out the innovative Clarity Aloft headset on the web at clarityaloft.com.
Welcome back to Lakeland. Paul Plack here with Tom Poberesny, president of the Experimental Aircraft Association. Tom, I don't want to wrap up this conversation without talking about the current debate over the 51% rule. I want to start at this, though, with a question you probably don't get first in many interviews, and that is, are we underutilizing the available regulatory channels to get kit-build aircraft together? There's an experimental kit-build category as well.
Right, you know, and we certainly want to expand upon that to allow people to go to the next level in terms of building. We'll talk about that in a moment. You use the term 51% rule. That's kind of the acronym for the amateur-built regulations. In essence, as a builder, to qualify under the regulations, you have to build 51% of the airplane. And when we evolved into the kit aspects of amateur building, evaluations were done to ensure that the kits didn't exceed 49% built by the manufacturer, and 51% was left for the builder. And there's different levels. It could be a 40% kit or a 30%. And using reasonably subjective with some objectivity in evaluating the criteria. The pressure we're facing today, that as the airplanes become more complex, where do you draw the line in terms of what's manufactured as a part of the kit and what is 51% of the activities accomplished by the builder? We're really addressing this from two perspectives. We strongly advocate not to change the parameters that are currently used to evaluate kits that qualify in terms of 49% or less provided by the manufacturer. That is working. The problem we're running into is commercial assistance. That after the builder buys the kit, the level of assistance they're getting or paying for by others who are not building their, who is not the original builder. That's where the problem is, and that's an enforcement issue, it's an education issue. It's also where this kit category that you talked about comes in, where it allows the use of commercial assistance but puts you in a different category. And we'd like to see that flushed out and utilized to a greater extent and more emphasis put on that from a regulatory standpoint. So our strong position is keep the kit evaluation process as is. It's working, working well at Spawn Innovation. Safety has been well taken care of within the context of education and participation on behalf of EAA. But we need to address the commercial assistance issue. There are abuses taking place out there that it could impact the regulations. And if we do that, we're going to lose portions of a privilege that has been served us well over the past five decades.
You know, I see somewhat of a parallel in my other hobby. I'm a ham radio operator. And if you go back to the 1930s and 1940s, there were guys building radio transmitters and receivers by winding house wiring onto oatmeal cans to make big coils and that sort of thing. And over the years, the manufactured equipment has just become so much better, and the regulations have required the performance level that it delivers. It almost is impossible to build your own stuff anymore. Is the kind of education we should be looking to get out of home building now more in the area of how to program avionics or how to work with autopilots or things like that? Is that an issue that needs to be addressed in the changes?
Well, I think, Paul, the level of education depends on the skill levels of the individual. It's pretty hard to come up with a cookie-cutter approach that says this will one shoe fits all. I think the key here is the builder has to understand the regulation and what it means by building 51% of the airplane and adhere to that. And if you don't, there's the situation where you may not be certificated in the future. What we don't want to do is have this issue of commercial assistance or, quote, hired gun, is the quote that's being used, kill a program that has been an important part of the vibrancy economically and innovation-wise of the aviation community. And we will work hard proactively and reactively to ensure that the integrity of the 51% rule is protected. At the same time, we'll work with the industry and others to ensure that the integrity of what's intended by the builder is protected too, so that proper enforcement or understanding, that's the right word, understanding education, what it means to build 51% of the airplane. Because if we don't do that, we may lose parts of the privilege that's so important to the future vitality of the industry.
Tom, we really appreciate your joining us today for a few minutes. All of us at Aero News look forward to the great experience that is Oshkosh. And thanks so much for taking some time out to talk to us today.
We look forward to seeing you and the Aero News Network team at Oshkosh. We think it's the world's premier aviation event, and we're pleased to be recognized with many of the other fine events around the world as one of the finest to attend. And we welcome everybody and anybody from wherever you are in the world. Join us.
You can keep up with all the latest on Air Venture and all the other things happening in the movement at eaa.org. My guest has been Tom Paul Berezny, who is the president of the Experimental Aircraft Association, and you've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. On the web, you'll find us at Aero, that's AERO-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.